Okay, Chris.
All right, I'm going to mute you. Okay, morning, guys. As Greg said, we're gonna find out what the Holy Spirit has to say here today. We're going to be looking at Exodus 27. We're only going to be doing the first probably half of the chapter. And I wanted to start out by just reminding everyone that today is the two-year anniversary of Tad Trier's death. And so I want to take just a moment to remember our brother Tad. If you happen to think of it sometime today, pray for his wife, who is still alive and kicking, and but unfortunately living alone. Tad was a great guy, and there have been so many other guys that have passed away at Faith Walkers that we can remember. Anyway, just wanted to start with that. So I'm going to read Exodus 27, just verses 1 through 8 to begin. It says, build an altar of acacia wood, 3 cubits high. It is to be square, 5 cubits long, and 5 cubits wide. Make a horn at each of the 4 corners so that the horns and the altar are of one piece, and overlay the altar with bronze. Make all of its utensils bronze, its pots to remove the ashes, and its shovels, sprinkling bowls, meat forks, and fire pans. Make a grating for it, a bronze network, and make a bronze ring at each of the 4 corners of the network. Put it under the ledge of the altar so that it is halfway up the altar. Make poles of acacia wood for the altar and overlay them with bronze. The poles are to be inserted into the rings so they will be on the 2 sides of the altar when it is carried. Make the altar hollow out of boards. Now, there's one more sentence in this section. And but for that sentence, if this was all the Israelites had to construct this altar, you can imagine how many different ways it might possibly have turned out. Because even though there's 8 verses here that describe how to make it, there isn't a whole lot of specificity. So people could have made whatever they want. And in the last verse, God says, it is to be made just as you were shown on the mountain. Okay, which is interesting. God probably gave them whatever the 4th century BC equivalent was of blueprints, right? Or 4,000 years before, whatever. So it's just fascinating. Oh, did he just tell someone something, or did he etch a picture in stone? We don't really know, but apparently they knew what to do. And in fact, they had been doing this all along anyway. God just had a specific way for them to build this particular one, specific dimensions. So the last week, Henry's chapter, which I don't think was read for very good reason, was similar to this. And we look at these verses and we see all the, cubits and make it this high and that high and out of this material and make it this color and everything. So I was saying to myself, there's got to be something to talk about besides the cubits this week. And what I sort of zeroed in on was the idea of sacrifice. And so what's being built here is an altar. And besides the fact that we know from reading other places in the Bible what altars are used for, it says to build an altar right in the first part of this. And altars were They date all the way back to Genesis. The first altar was from Genesis chapter 8. And here's the word about it. Then Noah built an altar to the Lord, and taking some of all the clean animals and clean birds, he sacrificed burnt offerings on it. And that's the first time in the Bible that an altar is mentioned, although it isn't the first time that offerings are mentioned. And can't really have back and forth with you as I'm speaking on Zoom here, but for those, this would be a good trivia, Bible trivia question. Who made the first offering to the Lord? And the answer, which I'm sure probably some of you know, is Cain made the first offering, followed up in short order by Abel. Okay. So in there are just some interesting things about this altar, and which show what I don't know about materials. And, you know, if the engineers in the group can inform me sometime, that might be good. But these altars that were used, and this one is in the title of this section, is called the Altar of Burnt Offering. So this is where they slaughtered the animals and burned them, actually cooked them to do a couple of things. One was to make an aroma that was pleasing to the Lord. And the second was to provide food for the priests to eat. So I'm thinking this is like a big Weber grill or a big gas grill or something. There's a lot of death and destruction that occurs on this. And they're also firing up the grill and cooking it. And you can see in verse 3 here, it says, make all the utensils of bronze, its pots to remove the ashes. So somehow, just like your fireplace, there's somewhere that the ashes had to go, and they were apparently put in pots to make it easy to get the ashes out of the way. And it's shovels, again, presumably for either getting the ashes out of the way or for shoveling off the debris from the sacrificed animals that were on the altar. It's sprinkling bowls. Not exactly sure what's going on there, unless that's to sprinkle the blood of the butchered animal. Meat forks, pretty obvious there, for turning the meat so it roasts properly. The priests didn't want to eat, you know, charred animal flesh. They wanted it to be nicely cooked, and the nicely cooked stuff smells better. And fire pans. And I'm thinking that the fire pans are maybe like the grate in your fireplace that you put the logs on to start them on fire. But anyway, it's just interesting to read that. So sacrifice and offering are often used in the Bible. And I thought it would be good to start out and look at definitions of sacrifice and of offering. And so here's what I found from the dictionary that might be pertinent. For sacrifice, an act of slaughtering an animal or a person or surrendering a possession as an offering to God or to a divine or supernatural figure. Another definition, an animal, person, or object offered in the sacrifice. And a third definition, an act of giving up something valued for the sake of something else regarded as more important or worthy. For offering, a few definitions, something offered as a religious sacrifice or a token of devotion, a thing offered as a gift or a contribution, or a sacrifice ceremonially offered as a part of worship. Now, in every thesaurus that I looked in, sacrifice and offering were always listed as synonyms for each other. That doesn't mean that they mean the same thing in every situation, but it does mean that in many situations, they mean exactly or nearly the same thing. Just as a statistic thing, because I'm into statistics, the word sacrifice appears 303 times in the Old Testament, and the word offering appears 705 times. In the New Testament, the word sacrifice appears 54 times, and the word offering appears 23 times. So a lot more uses of the word offering in the Old Testament, and a lot more uses of the word sacrifice as opposed to offering in the New Testament. And presumably, maybe the word sacrifice is used more in the New Testament because we most often refer to Christ's death on the cross as a sacrifice rather than an offering. And so there'd be lots of references to that. In Exodus 18:12, I'll give you some examples here of times when both words are used. It says, then Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, brought a burnt offering and other sacrifices to God. So a burnt offering is considered a sacrifice. And then he brought some things that weren't a burnt offering that were also considered sacrifices. In Philippians 4:18, Paul says, I have received full payment and have more than enough. I am amply supplied now that I have received from Epaphroditus the gift you sent. They are a fragrant offering, an acceptable sacrifice, pleasing to God. So here's the situation where something is an offering and a sacrifice. In Ephesians 5, verses 1 to 2, Paul says, follow God's example, therefore, as dearly loved children, and walk in the way of love, just as Christ loved us and gave himself up for us as a fragrant offering and sacrifice to God. So this is an instance, I'm not sure if it's the only instance, I didn't check, in the Bible where Christ's death on the cross is called an offering. In fact, like the animal sacrifices in the Old Testament, Christ's death on the cross is called here a fragrant offering to God, which just strikes maybe not the right chord sometimes inside of us when we think of maybe that Mel Gibson movie about the death of Christ, or other movies that we've seen, you know, The Passion of the Christ. When you see what Christ endured in the process of being killed on the cross, and then calling that a fragrant offering to God. But those are the words that are used in the Bible. So the question for us, in light of Christ's sacrificial death on the cross, Easter's coming, which completely atoned for our sins once and for all, is this: does God require us to offer him any sacrifices today? Or after Christ's sacrifice, is that it for sacrifices? Not a topic we need to worry about anymore. Well, the way to find out is to take a look at the New Testament and search for the word sacrifice. Okay, again, I'm kind of a research geek sort of a guy, so I can do it using a computer. All of you can do it if you have a computer as well. You can get a Bible app, you can use Bible Gateway, or you can do it the old-fashioned way, and you can go out and buy a big honkin' concordance, which I have one that weighs about 5 pounds, and it's wonderful. So when you look in the New Testament, you do find uses of the word sacrifice, and you do find instances where God still does ask for sacrifices. Not sacrifices to atone for sin. That's done with. Christ took care of that. But different kinds of sacrifices. And it's interesting, as I was doing my research for this talk, and again, stuff that you know about, I'm sure, but we'll just review it anyway. When you look at the sacrifices in the Old Testament that supposedly atoned for sin, they sort of really didn't. And the Old Testament says that, and the New Testament, especially in the book of Hebrews, says that they didn't. They were kind of a metaphor or an example, a type, things that pointed forward to Christ's ultimate sacrifice. And but they didn't actually atone for sin. They didn't actually take away the sin. And even when you look in at the words used in the Old Testament for what the sacrifices did for sin, it's really more the word for covering sin as opposed to taking it away. The same word that was used to refer to the pitch that Noah painted onto the ark to make it waterproof is the same word that's used for the sacrifices that are made in the Old Testament. But when we, I want to limit what I'm going to talk today to just in Romans chapter 12. And in verse 1 of Romans 12, we read, "Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship." So now there's a new adjective that we haven't seen before being used with the word sacrifice, and it's called a living sacrifice. And sometimes Christ may be referred to as a living sacrifice, or his death might be referred to as a living sacrifice, but we haven't seen this before where the Bible is referring to something that we're supposed to do as a living sacrifice. In Old Testament times, living sacrifice would have been a contradiction in terms, right? The whole point of the sacrifice was that it was killed. So one commentator wrote, "Our act of worship is no longer to bring a sacrifice," which is what the people in the Old Testament did. They brought the sacrifice, they put it on the altar, they killed it, they burned it up. "Our act of worship is no longer to bring a sacrifice, but to be one ourselves. We remain living. It is all of us that is being sacrificed all the time. Worship is about what I say with my tongue. It's about what I watch, what I think, how I behave, where I go with my feet." Eugene Peterson in The Message sort of translates verse 1 of Romans 12 this way. He says, "Take your everyday ordinary life, your sleeping, eating, going to work, and walking around life, and place it before God as an offering." So when we wake up in the morning and get out of bed, we can pray some kind of a prayer, talk to God and say, "Lord, I offer you my life today." That sounds pretty good. And I'm sure I've probably said that in the past, in the morning before I got out of bed. I don't make a habit of doing it, as I know that some people do. But maybe once in a while, you're like me, when I've said that in the past, I've sort of even wondered about the words I was saying as I said it. What exactly does that mean? I offer my life to you today. I was remembering as I was going through this, thinking back to my childhood, my mother had a favorite expression that she would say to me if I was sick, if I hurt myself, if I had something that I had to do that I didn't want to do. Maybe your moms or dad said this thing to you. She would say, "Chris, offer it up to God." I can't tell you how many times that was her answer to how I was to deal with the fact that something was happening in my life that wasn't pleasant. Offer it up to God. Again, just coming out of Lent right now, I was also reminded of, and having grown up Catholic, although this isn't necessarily a Catholic thing, I was reminded of giving up desserts for Lent. You know, we don't need a show of hands necessarily, but I would imagine that I was not the only person as a kid who gave up desserts for Lent. In fact, interestingly enough, my uncle, who was Methodist, was never Catholic at any point in his life, gave up desserts for Lent. I was shocked because the first time I found out, because at some point I thought, well, that's only a Catholic thing. You know, why would Protestants do this? You know, but he gave up desserts for Lent. Now, what he didn't give up was yelling at his wife when she irritated him. What he didn't give up was being loud and sort of bossy with his kids. What he didn't give up was expressing his opinion to everyone and anyone anytime he felt like it, in no uncertain terms, telling them that they were full of it and that they were wrong for believing what they did. And the irony of that sort of struck me, that he was making this offering or this sacrifice in Lent in this one little area of giving up desserts, but it didn't seem like the rest of his life was consistent with that. And lest I sound like a hypocrite and one who's trying just to point out other people's faults, he was one step ahead of me because I didn't even give up desserts. Okay. And still the rest of my life had all this stuff going on that didn't look like a life that was a living sacrifice. So just to kind of close up here and take a look at the issue of how do we decide what offering our life as a living sacrifice looks like. And I think go back here to Romans 1. So it says, offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. So the idea is that this offering of our lives is worship. And most of the time in my life, when I think of worship, it's time specific. So how often have you said, I'm going to go to worship service on Sunday morning? I'm going to go to church and worship. Or, oh, they're going to have a special worship service on Saturday evening this week. Or you're in a Bible study. Okay, let's spend a few minutes and worship the Lord in song before we start our Bible study. So it's not something that we usually associate with being an ongoing thing. It's usually, okay, let's do worship and then let's get on with life. But that isn't this sense in which that Paul's talking about in Romans 12. And He also says, and this we see with this word sacrifice throughout the Old and New Testament, holy and pleasing to God is what it says in Romans 12:1. So holy, we all know from all of the teachings we've had over the years what holy means. It means set apart for God. Okay? And pleasing God means pleasing God. But pleasing God doesn't mean pleasing him the way we think is best to please him. It means pleasing him in the way that he wants us to please him. He's the one who decides what's pleasing to him and what isn't. And there's tons of places in the Bible where he tells us, and the words in the Bible say, and this is pleasing to the Lord. And so here in Romans 12, right after Paul tells us that we're to offer our bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing, the rest of Romans 12 sort of talks about what that looks like. And so I'm going to read through this quickly and maybe make a couple comments, maybe not make a lot of comments. In chapter 2, do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. So again, this is about what does it look like to be a living sacrifice? Something has to change inside of you. You have to be transformed somehow from some way that you were to some other way. And you do it, it says, by renewing your mind. And we know from years and years of Bible study and reading the Bible that they're talking about the transformation is going from being centered on ourselves to being centered on God, being primarily concerned about ourselves or being primarily concerned about God. That's the transformation that has to take place. And that's what Paul's referring to as this living sacrifice. And starting in verse 3, from there through probably verse 8, he talks about, it's basically service in the body of Christ. And he talks about gifts and using the gifts that God has given us. And this is not a talk about gifts or anything, but he does mention some other gifts. And he says, if you have this gift, then use it. Starting in verse 9, back again to what does this living life of a living sacrifice look like? Paul says in verse 9, love must be sincere. Hate what is evil, cling to what is good. Be devoted to one another in love. Honor one another above yourselves. These are aspects of a life that is dedicated to the Lord, of this living sacrifice that we're supposed to be, that we should have. Now, everyone's life of living sacrifice is not going to look the same. However many different people there are in the world, that's how many different looks there could be to what that sacrificial life looks like. But there's sort of some principles that are given here to guide us as we attempt to live this life of living sacrifice. And so when it says, honor one another above yourselves, if that isn't a focus of yours to consider other people, there's another verse in the Bible too, I don't remember where it is, to consider other people better than yourself, or other people before yourself, or put their needs above your needs, then maybe the life that you're sacrificing to God, your living sacrifice, might be not as acceptable to God as it could be. And one thing, even with the Old Testament sacrifices that were very ritualistic and very symbolic, the people back then paid very particular attention about doing it just the way God said. And so we have this same word sacrifice now that's being used in how our whole life is supposed to be a sacrifice. Are we as concerned about doing it just the way God said? And again, not being robots, not being clones of each other, but our desire to please God is very important. And the effort that we put into what would please God is very important. Remember back, we were talking about Cain and Abel and their sacrifice. You remember, Cain's sacrifice wasn't acceptable. Abel's sacrifice was acceptable. Lots and lots has been written about why that was. And whatever you want to believe about that, the bottom line is that there are sacrifices that are acceptable to God, and there are sacrifices that are not acceptable to God. Why would we want to sacrifice something to God that wasn't acceptable to him? So he continues on.
Chris, I can't hear you. Can everyone else hear Chris?
All right. I'm good. All right. This will sound interesting on the recording. So can you hear me now, Dennis? Yeah, looks like I think everyone else can hear me. Sorry if you can't. So continuing on the rest of Romans 12, again, Paul is laying out here things to consider right after he's told you to make your lives a living sacrifice. Being joyful, being faithful in prayer, sharing with other people, practicing hospitality, blessing those who persecute you, blessing and not cursing. This is a huge one. Quite frankly, it's a huge one for old men who are all of you guys on the screen and me looking at you. We seem to have a problem as a gender and as an age group to keep from cursing other people. Not saying you SOB, but to keep from giving our opinion about why you're wrong about everything that doesn't agree with the way we think. It's God says here, bless other people. Verse 15, rejoice with those who rejoice, mourn with those who mourn. This is about empathy. Another thing that humans in general, but especially men, and as we get older, especially older men, have a problem with empathy. We forget what it was like to be younger. We forget what it was like when we didn't have as much money or as nice of a house. We don't take the time to think about what it's like to be a person who's not a man, or a person who's not our color, or it doesn't come from our economic background. Paul's saying, no, be empathetic. Live in harmony with one another. Don't be proud. Be willing to associate with people of low position. Don't be conceited. Don't repay evil for evil. Be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everyone. If it is possible, as far as depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Can you imagine what the world would be like if everyone took that seriously? Do not take revenge. If your enemy is hungry, feed him. Again, your enemy. If your enemy is thirsty, give him something to drink. These are intentional and they're serious. And in a way, they're also metaphorical. They're not just talking about food and water. They're talking about needs in general. So that's enough of the examples that Paul has here. If you want more examples, read the rest of the Bible. It tells us how to live a life that's pleasing to God. And that life will be a sacrificial life. There's a reason that Paul calls this life a living sacrifice. It gets to that third definition that I gave at the beginning of sacrifice, an act of giving up something valued. That's something that we value is our lives. Giving that up for the sake of something else regarded as more important. That something else that's more important is pleasing God. It's what God wants. It's God's will. When that's more important than what we want for our lives, then we start to move into that realm of being a living sacrifice. Again, looks different for everyone. Don't be going out and saying, hey, you need to clean up your life and do this and that so you can be a living sacrifice. If you want to point a finger at anyone, point it at yourselves. God isn't looking for clones or robots, but he wants genuineness, and he wants us to take seriously that our lives need to be his, not ours. So that's how you take what seems like a dull, boring chapter on how to build an altar and turn it into something that applies to your life. You basically go somewhere else. If you ever have to give a talk on a chapter that you think is horrible, what am I going to do with this? Find something in that chapter that's talked about some other way, and then go and talk about that. So that's it. God bless you guys this morning.